This is an RNZ podcast.
Nō mai, haere mai. Welcome to Country Life and a new season of stories from rural New Zealand. I'm Carol Stiles.
Kia ora, it's great to have you with us. Ko Sally Round, tēnā. Today we're taking you to the Northern Coromandel to meet a man who's made furniture for a castle in Scotland.
We hear about the pandemic's silver lining for Marlborough wine.
And later on, we're at an on-farm sheep sale where top dollar was paid for an easy care meat breed.
But first, this week's guest. She's returned home to Taranaki after working for the summer near Alexandra.
My name is Fionnuala Reynolds and I am studying horticulture at Massey University, and I've just spent 10 weeks down in central Otago doing my summer internship at an organic orchard down there as part of my degree.
How did it go?
It was an interesting experience because this year they had a lot of rain down there. So the cherry season was brought to a bit of a fast end.
How much rain did you have?
It rained solidly for 3 days, so we got our 300 annual mills in 3 days. With the rain, the cherries like will explode and sort of split, so then they're like unsellable. And also then the picking becomes a lot harder.
Did you actually do any of the picking yourself?
Not a lot, as it turned out, no. I was actually doing the quality control. So I go through the cherry pickers' buckets just randomly as they come through, sort through each bucket and see how much like waste they're picking, like bad cherries, cherries without stalks, just cherries that can't be marketed. And then if they're like above a certain amount, then the cherry picker like will need to improve their buckets, because obviously you can't be sending buckets full of rubbish to the pack house, because otherwise it clogs them up.
How much can an average picker pick in a day? How many kilos might you get through if you're a good picker?
Well, they sort of work it out by bucket. So you're supposed to pick 3 buckets an hour, so that's 27 buckets. But then a good picker can pick more than that.
Were there many students working on the orchard?
No, there weren't, actually. There were, like, quite a few overseas people who have just extended their visas to like last another 6 months. No, there weren't many students.
By the end of the season, were you still eating cherries?
No. No, I think you get a bit sick of cherries by the end of the season.
Massey University student Fionnuala Reynolds.
And now to our look at conditions around the country. In Northland, dairy farmers are desperate for rain, but at least they have plenty of supplementary feed on hand. The beef market's a bit average. Prime beef is getting about $5 a kilogram. This week, the first of this season's red kumara have been harvested in the region. The harvest will stretch out until early May. A grower says he's had 50 millimetres of rain for January. He too would like more. The Pukekohe district's very dry. It's often had southwesterly breezes this month, so temperatures have been a little lower than they could have been. Good crops of onions are being harvested and are going into storage and packing sheds. Irrigators are being well used on many different crops.
Much of Waikato has had good rain since Christmas, but it has been a bit patchy. With recent hot, fine days, the region's dried out rapidly and it's hard to tell there's been any rain at all. Dairy farmers are busily feeding silage, so milk production is holding reasonably well. Farmers with covered pads have been using them. It's generally a couple of degrees cooler under cover than out in the open. Sprinklers are being turned on cows in the milking shed and they love it. Maize crops are looking fantastic. Our contact in the Bay of Plenty says he's had 10 times the amount of rain this January compared to last January. However, 10 times not much is still not much. Last January he had just 8 millimetres and this year it's been 80. He recorded the lowest annual rainfall in 28 years for 2020. His cows are milked once a day and he's pleased that people and cows are not having to be in the shed in the stifling mid-afternoon temperatures. The milk price is looking good. As for kiwifruit, estimates are the industry will be 7 to 8% up in total volume this year. The worry is whether there'll be enough people to pick and pack the crop. Kiwifruit growers are looking to the apple and grape industries to see how they cope with the worker shortage. Then it'll be their turn.
There's moisture in the ground in King Country and it's been warm, so mornings have been foggy. That makes mustering tricky and creates ideal conditions for flies. Growth's been good and one farmer made his fourth cut of hay. Calves have been weaned on beef farms and most of the shearing's done. Summer in Taranaki's ranged from reasonable to marvellous. Some parts of the province have had very good rain, the north more than the south. Other parts have watched dark clouds gather but have been disappointed. Milk production's good, plenty of hay and silage have been made. Some crops that were looking very poor have taken off after rain.
People on the east coast around Wairoa are looking forward to Monday. Temperatures are expected to drop to 18 degrees from the mid-30s of this week. The region's dried out very quickly and a farmer there says it's a ticking time bomb. There's a lot of dry, rank grass and they're very aware of the fire danger. He's been calling off in the river, but nice, deep holes with cool bottoms have been hard to find. Otherwise, he's been sitting in the paddling pool at home with a hat on. Lots of sweet corn went in unseasonably late. It's pulling away now. A Hawke's Bay grape grower was inside trying to keep out of the heat when we rang, but ended up doing another hot job bottling plums instead. It's been 37 degrees in the vineyard this week. He says summer's been great. There's been rain and heat when growers have wanted it. Grapes are changing colour now, 10 days earlier than usual. On farms, north faces have really dried off, but farms towards the hills and with south-facing slopes are green.
Wairarapa hasn't had much rain this month, but a great spring set farmers up well for summer. January's been coolish, apart from the past week, which has been a scorcher. Farmers want a couple of good rains in February, please. Sheep farmers have been shearing and are looking forward to a quieter time now that job's done. Manawatu has had some really good rain after Christmas. Some good old Manawatu winds have been blowing and it's been warm. On farm, there's more grass than usual for the time of year, so there's no pressure for sheep farmers to sell stock. Down country, people are looking to buy in animals to eat the grass.
Across Cook Strait to the Tasman region and irrigation's ramping up on farms, vineyards and in orchards. Water rationing's on the cards next week for the Waimea Plains. Most people are gearing up for fruit picking, doing summer shoot removal and finishing off any late thinning. A grower near Richmond says he's employing 2 75-year-olds as he can't find younger seasonal workers. He reckons they're more reliable too. Significant crop losses are expected as a result of the Boxing Day hailstorm, which left up to 100 millimetres of hail on the ground and stones as big as marbles. Grapes are turning colour in Marlborough vineyards and rolls of bird netting are at the ready. It's been fiercely hot. Sally clocked 39 degrees as she drove out of Molesworth Station this week. The bulls are out with the cows there and it's a 4 a.m. start for musterers to get work done before the heat really kicks in. The pandemic has led to a shortage of Indian salt. Blocks of it are used as salt licks for the cattle.
After having the fire going a week ago, our contact at Barrytown on the west coast says conditions have perked up this week. It's warmer and there's been more rain. He doesn't record how much, but says the wheelbarrow's not full yet. Farmers are regrassing paddocks and, weather permitting, making silage. Pregnancy testing started with results so far no better than average. Cows are ticking along nicely, though, with milk production on par with last year. After good recent rains in Canterbury, summer hit with a vengeance this week, with temperatures well into the mid-30s combined with nor'west winds. While pretty tough to work in, a farmer at Hororata says it's been good for the start of harvest. Early cereals and grass seed crops are coming off. Feed levels are okay at the moment, although soil moisture has plummeted with the recent hot spell. South Canterbury farmers woke to a chilly morning on Friday with snow on the hills. It was 2 degrees. 38 degrees less than on Tuesday.
A fruit grower in Roxburgh in central Otago says about 60% of his cherry crop has split due to rain. Luckily, he grows other fruit. He has apricots and the ladders are up in the nectarine blocks. With it being cold and unusually wet, some of the stone fruit has been affected by rot. On a positive note, he's had no problems finding seasonal staff. The grass is growing like crazy in Southland after what has been a sometimes wet and a sometimes sunny week. Dairy farmers are making baleage and silage and most winter crops are now in. A farmer at Edendale says his contract for palm kernel expired at the end of last month. It cost $280 a tonne then, but now it shot up to about $360, so he's not sure if he can afford it anymore. A cheaper option is grain, but he reckons cow conditions much better on palm kernel. Across the region, farmers are pretty happy with their latest forecast payout. Finding reliable staff for farms is still a headache, though. Staff poaching is becoming more commonplace, and the farmer we spoke to said he's just about done with trying to find a Kiwi under 40.
This is Country Life on RNZ National 101 FM.
As Carol mentioned, I've been in Marlborough this week where I caught up with Marcus Pickens, who runs the regional wine association Wine Marlborough. I asked him how the overseas markets for New Zealand's biggest wine region have fared a year since the global pandemic struck.
Well, thankfully, they've held up for us. Of course, we were all fearful that we wouldn't be able to access those markets or consumption would just crash. They've kept going, and in fact, in a very healthy way for us. Our wine sales are well skewed towards the take-home wine market, buying wine from your supermarket and taking it home with you. So a lot of our wine is in those channels anyway, and they are the ones that thankfully have survived. We'd love hospitality to have kept going, of course, because that's important also, but the majority of our wine is sold in those supermarket outlets.
The biggest export markets for you are the US and the UK, the biggest victims of the pandemic.
Yeah, it's been quite interesting that, yeah, we've continued to service those markets, access them and sell wine really successfully. Our sales figures are well up on our previous position of a sort of 12 months ago.
How much have they grown by?
We were certainly up about 20% above the previous, you know, previous year. So,
and that's solely due to people being stuck at home?
Yeah, we think so. Yeah, it's an enjoyment that people can access and continue life as normal in some ways.
What about the local market for wine? And also, of course, tourism being a huge part of the Marlborough region. How has that fared?
That has been challenging. I mean, again, in New Zealand, the supermarket sales are at record levels. So that's been successful. Of course, hospitality's had a major challenge, and so have we, in selling wine to them. And so, you know, we've got a lot of friends and colleagues in those venues that really had an extremely tough year, as everybody knows. You know, they've come back and shown their sort of remodelling their businesses. For us, the tourism side is the cellar door visitation in Marlborough. It's really important to us. Amazingly, the cellar door group here were quite resilient. As soon as we could, we pretty much got going again. Most of them showed goodwill just to open and test the market. They redesigned their offering, I suppose, in terms of more one-on-one time. They were pleasantly surprised at how much time they could spend with those visitors compared to what it was in the past, with just huge numbers of people turning up.
Busloads of people.
Busloads, cruise ship days, you know, a little bit out of control on occasions. And it was a bit of a scramble. COVID came along, reset the picture, and our cellar doors have been really amazed at, like, oh, this is how it was meant to be. We're meant to be able to tell our story to the people who seek us out, you know, share our sort of family story about our place in the wine market. We want to continue it. We want to work out how can we keep this going, and, you know, without being just swept along on a big wave of just, you know, out of control.
Increased local visitors, is that translating into increased sales of the
cellar door? It is, and of course, with domestic tourists, they can take wine with them. You know, there are sometimes impediments for people to take wine on a cruise ship, obviously, they're, you know, or even some people who are short stay people, you know, they're like, how do I get this wine home?
One of the other aspects of the pandemic is the shortage of labour. What is the outlook for the harvest?
It has been our biggest headache, I think, has been the labour situation. Winter pruning is our peak need for vineyard labour in Marlborough by far. A lot of people think it's our harvest period because obviously a lot of other crops like apples and kiwi fruit, and they have to be hand-picked. We're fortunate here in Marlborough where probably 95% of our crop comes off by machine harvest. It's actually better for the wine. So we do it because it's the best thing to do, not because it's, and it is probably the most efficient by far. But winter pruning's been our headache the whole way through. Thankfully, we managed to get through last year with the RSC workforce and a few new Kiwis joining us, which is great. Moving into harvest or vintage, which is coming up soon, where we make the wine, that has been a major concern for the wine companies. They normally have people that want to come to New Zealand, experienced winemakers and wine experts that come here to experience our way of doing things. It's been a great win for New Zealand or our industry because we get to their expertise as well. They come to us to learn from us. We learn from them.
If you're not getting those people, what's going to happen?
It was pretty stressful before Christmas. We're well short of the numbers we needed, but thankfully we've surveyed our wineries, we're close to them, we get good information from them, and we've actually closed the gap really, really nicely with a few visa updates, I guess, and immigration sped up one of their processes. So the people that remained here from overseas that are experienced, they got approved to be able to go back and work for the wineries they wanted to. So great win before Christmas. And then we have recruited a lot of Kiwis. I think we've surprised ourselves and surprised everyone that, yep, Kiwis have answered the call.
And what sort of jobs are these Kiwis doing and where have they come from?
Oh, gosh, yeah, they've kind of come from everywhere. A few people travelling into the region to experience it, but also locals here. Some students that might have finished university that might be going out, would have gone overseas. And we want to really understand what was the experience like for them. Would they join our industry full time because they've had a taste of the way we do things and how much fun it is and the global connectivity of it. When borders open, they could go and do this all around the world if they wanted to. Yeah, we need to understand that. How can we assist you to get further education and develop your skills? They're exciting to us. We need that Kiwi cohort to stay with us. And I'm sure there will be some amazing stories that we can uncover and share with others to say, hey, these jobs are out there and they're fun.
Marcus Pickens of Wine Marlborough.
Colville in the Northern Coromandel may just be 80 kilometres from Thames, but the drive there is a slow one. It'll take more than an hour and a half to weave around the coastline and head up and over hills to reach the tiny community. Greg Taylor has lived there for more than 40 years, and most days he puts flags out at the bottom of a steep driveway to let passers-by know they're welcome to pop up to his showroom. So I did.
I was a misfit to society, and I think the whole area is full of us. And once I got here, I felt I was home for the first time ever.
You worked in forestry when you first got here?
I actually grew marijuana and went to jail for a while when I first got here. I was a gardener. Yeah, I don't know what I was doing here. Building, making a garden, making a house, making a road.
But you had been working in forestry in Tokoroa.
I was born a bushman's son, yeah. Like, I've worked in the forest since the 60s, I suppose. I used to teach people how to cut trees down, break out, drive bulldozer, do skid work. Yeah, I've done gardening, I've done property development management for the corporate world. I've done a lot of things, sawmilling.
And you've been a petrol pump attendant at the general store?
Yeah, about 40 years ago, yeah. It's a good shop. It's not only a shop, but our social workers, all them girls down there. Because sometimes we go to the shop, we haven't spoken to anybody for days. You know, well, all the shop keepers are all sort of like social workers.
Did you really go to prison?
Yep.
Yeah, where did you go?
Started at Waikeria, Hautū, then Mount Eden. Just for a bag of herbs.
How big a bag?
It's quite a big bag. Like a suitcase. Just going through a broken marriage, lost half of what I own, so this junkie, which I'd never even seen marijuana before when I was growing up, junkie said, oh, let's go marijuana. I said, what's that you get caught? Oh, like a parking ticket. I got caught and he got the crop.
Today, somebody wouldn't be
today,
put away
from that. If I got caught with that, I'd probably get to clean the school for a couple of months. In prison, well, actually, they had big crops growing in there off the screws, selling it through to jails.
But now... you make furniture, wooden furniture.
Yep, now I make wooden furniture, as you can see, and grow vegetables. And cook. I'm a great cook. Christmas cakes, apple pie, roasts. I'm quite famous for roasts. Usually cook what I grow only, actually.
We've got a huge vegetable garden.
There's carrots, parsnips, coomeras, potatoes, salad, and that one. And then there's other stuff over here, zucchinis, pumpkins, tomatoes, everything. Sheep. But mainly I've been logging and milling and selling timber and selling furniture, sending logs all around the world.
There's quite a bit of forestry in this area.
Yep, I got my own.
Is it all regenerating bush out here?
Yep, I've got virgin native bush on the back of my place where I get my water from. There's pigs there, kiwis, thousands of kiwis. They're bloody noisy things, man. And now it's so dry in the hills, they're coming right down close to the flatlands looking for worms, you know, because they can't get their beaks through the dirt because it's so dry up in the mountains. We need some rain for the kiwis.
When you moved up here initially, what appealed?
The isolation, I think. Isolation. There was hardly any people living here. My nearest neighbours that way were Waititi Bay, which is 4 or 5 k's away. Nearest neighbours that way was probably 3 or 4 k's away. So there's probably, in this region, there's probably 6 people living, maybe 7. Being a bushman, I quite like being isolated.
But you don't mind people popping in?
Oh, no, I love yapping. Yep, 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 yep. Was a union delegate for a while.
There's a strange mix, or an interesting mix, I suppose, of people up here. There are sort of people who came up here when the community started.
The hippies.
Yeah, and then there are...
I tried to be a hippie, but...
Didn't work.
No, they told me I was too much of a redneck. They were all high... Mostly they were highly educated, all them people. Didn't fit in. They were on a different wavelength. I'm into killing things, like possums, and I like cutting big trees down. The bigger the tree, the better.
Tell me about the things that you make out of timber.
Well, I let the timber tell me what to do with it. Like my father taught me, you should try to cut what's in the forest, you know, rather than trying to make something out of blah, blah, blah. Like you go to a forest, right, and you have to get 12-metre logs out of trees that don't have them. So I do the same with my woodwork. I look at the piece of wood. Actually, I look at the log, and when I mill the log myself, I see what I'm going to get out of it when I mill it. You know, the shapes. I like shapes. I don't like square things because they're quite boring for a dyslexic person. They're too hard to make. But I remember as a child, at a certain age, I got this beautiful wooden pencil box, you know, and they had all the different pieces of New Zealand native woods engraved in them. Nearly every kid had one, I think. And they said, now make sure you write your name on it, Greg. I said, I'll do better than that. I'll carve it in with my pocket knife. And I spelt it wrong. Yeah, got Taylor wrong. That was the laughing stock. Here's where I make me stuff. Over here's a nice piece of puri.
When you look at that shape, what do you see?
I see a freestanding kitchen island or a bar. It's like a piece of flipping steel, that wood. It's puri.
What colour will that be?
Black. That's the Metacarpa. Over here is Cape Cod chair production. Over there is a bookcase I was supposed to be building for somebody. Paid me a commission to get going.
So how much of your work is commission and how much is just, you know, people coming in off the street?
Yeah, well, I try to avoid commission work because unless they want me to do my style. But I usually boo-boo on the price and end up doing it for half the bloody price. Because they say, will you make me, and how much will that cost? And I go, how the hell would I know? But they want a price. How the hell do you know if you've never made something before what it's going to cost? And then you're like, far out, I'm doing this for nothing again. Look, I get that feeling quite regular, that I boo-booed on estimation. And a friend of mine who's a professional joiner, he said any commission work he charged double. I just can't do it.
You said you're dyslexic. Yeah. What was school like for you?
Bloody hell.
Just awful.
It was horrible. I was so glad. I wanted to leave when I was about 10 or 12. I asked my father if I could leave. No, you're not allowed. I was already working in a garage 60 hours a week before leaving school. I could run the till, I could grease the cars, I could give Warren a fitnesses, pump the gas, fix the tyres. Didn't have to write anything.
So it's putting words on paper that's the problem.
Yeah. Don't get me to write you a letter.
Numbers are fine?
Numbers are great. Over here I'm building a chair. There's a chair there.
So this is your template.
That's the word. God, you got your onto it.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what it was called. So I'll have to do an extra cut here because it's just to get the strength. You want strength in the back because people swing on chairs and they think they're using for scaffolding, they're using for swings, and chairs fall to bits. So I like to make my chairs with, say, 4 to 5 pieces of wood so they're strong. You know, if you've got 20 pieces of wood in a chair, you've got 20 more weak points. So I make them solid legs, solid back, solid seat.
But no two pieces would be the same, would they?
Never. Yeah, never the same. I've had people come in here and ask for me to make them a nest of tables. Go to the warehouse. But yeah, I've made stuff on commission that's gone to Sweden, Switzerland, a few shipments to one place there, Holland, Scotland. You know, people have got me to make a dining suite for their castle in Scotland, and got stuff in all around the world, actually, America.
So under here, is there native wood?
Or? It's all macro carpet. Here's native here, that's all carry there. This carry was a big log jam up in one of my valleys where I get my water from, and after a big storm, one log started to repair, so I took my bulldozer up the gully and chipped away and pulled out this one huge log. It was about 9 metres by 1,100 across. Had the axe scarf in it, you know, from the old Bushman days.
Wow.
You could still see ch-ch-ch. And I got that out, and then after every rain, all the logs that were jammed behind the ice started popping out. And over a couple of years, I got probably 50 to 100 tonne. One log was black, and all the woodwork's been black. Beautiful colour.
In the past, when we had tourists in New Zealand, you had woofers come through.
Yep.
And what sort of things did you get them to do?
Well, if they loved cleaning, I loved them to stay, but most of them wanted to come and learn how to do this woodwork because they have a website, or a lot of them are woodworkers from the other side of the world who make square shit like this and want to learn how to make nature stuff. You know, go with what God gave you, a shape. And here's my chainsaw bay. As you can see, that's all the dead chainsaw department. You're always going to have a lot of dead chainsaws and some that may go one day if you're a bushman. And when I started logging in Tokoroa, we used to have 125 McCulloch's, 125cc things. Oh, my God, I could hardly lift one now. Look, you come here and get this big, bloody heavy husky barn. It's still a bit sore, it still goes. You feel the weight of that, number of feet. It's huge.
Oh, gosh.
You got to run around with that all day. Meh, 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 meh. You might put wheels on it to drive it to the next tree.
Woodworker Greg Taylor, who lives near Colville. We'll put a link to Greg's website on our webpage.
What I like about being on the farm is the openness and being free to do what you like to do.
Oh, it has to be being outside in beautiful Aotearoa, as well as getting the opportunity to see what you've accomplished at the end of the day.
Country Life, 101 FM.
For our first feature story for 2021, we're at Mount Cass Station's on-farm Wiltshire sheep sale in North Canterbury. Cosmo Kentish Barnes managed to pin down Mount Cass farmer Andrew Hurd before things got too busy.
So we've got just under 3,500 sheep in the yards, sorted into a lot of small lines, probably to suit the market. And we are lucky enough to have the Mileta family from the Marlborough Sounds have joined us with their sheep. Got ewe lambs, two-tooth ewes, old ewes, and two-tooth rams.
Mm, and tell me about the breed.
We've been doing the Wiltshires for 12, 13 years, and the Miletas have been doing them for 16, I think. And we only really got into them as a result of the organic status that this farm has. I thought it was the only way we could possibly do it. And they've just grown on me, and we're just endeavouring to take all the wool off them just to make our life a hell of a lot easier.
And, of course, the Wiltshires are self-shedding sheep, aren't they?
Yeah, and then there's degrees of heritability of that, and we've tried to push, obviously, as highly heritable as possible. And then there's a nutrition part of that too, and the better fed they are, the better they shed, yeah.
Why do you think some people are interested in trying this breed out?
I think the easy care aspect of it and the frustration with the wool. It's a real shame because wool's a fantastic product, and I've dealt with wool all my life. I was a wool classer and farmed fine wool sheep till we came here, and I find it absolutely depressing that it's so poor. But it's an easy solution, these sheep. It's just like running small cattle.
Yeah. So it's all about the meat?
It's all about the meat, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good weather for the sale today.
Perfect day, overcast, a little bit of rain yesterday to keep the dust down.
And as well as having the on-farm sale here, you've got the truck there with the online bidder system, haven't you?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. And the sales that I've been to in relation to Wiltshires and other sheep, they've been pretty active. It's been a really good alternative for people in different locations. Sit at home on your kitchen table in the office and buy what you like by description.
Bidder's product manager, Liam Beattie, has a camera at the ready to live stream the sale.
So today we've got people who have registered for the sale as far north as Whangarei and as far south as Ranfurly at the moment.
So how do you bid for your online customers?
So you'll see today there's a bit of team member here on farm. And when a bid is placed from the rostrum here on farm, we lodge a bid on our site so that people at home are aware of what the current price is at. When a bid comes through from a remote buyer, that gets reflected to us and we are able to yell out bid. And so we effectively relay it, almost like a phone bidder.
Has COVID-19 really fast-tracked this online business?
Yeah, so like a lot of online offerings over COVID, you know, people had 6 weeks of lockdown to look at their computers. So we did see really phenomenal growth in sign-ups. Mm-hmm. One thing that hurt us, I guess, was that over the period there was quite a significant drought that impacted livestock trading in New Zealand, and meatworks and the likes weren't able to staff as highly as they might like, just for social distancing and what have you. So it was a little bit frustrating that, you know, COVID would seem to work in favour of an online platform, but there was a lot of other industry affecting variables that hurt. But one thing that came off the back of it was that we worked closely with PGG Wrightson's genetics team and worked with their auctioneers and saying, listen, if your clients can't get to a bull sale, how can we help facilitate that? And so off the back of that was working with them and bringing the product that you have today.
Andrew says this is the first Wiltshire sale they've held at Mount Cass Station.
We used to sell store lambs here up to about 5,000 in November, which always worked out very well. So a sale's not new to us, but a sale with this many lots is a bit of a challenge.
Mm. Yeah. We're standing right beside a pen where about 40 or 50 sheep have just entered.
Yeah, these are Mount Cass two-tooths, and I think they're second cut. Quality-wise, just drafted. Yeah.
And they literally have no wool on them at all, do they, apart from a few tufts on the top of their backs?
Yeah, and they'll lose those little ones there. They're quite a tidy line, actually, yeah.
Do you own this station here?
No, it's Sarah and I, my wife, are minority partners with a few other Kiwi families, but we are the managers, yeah.
Is it quite a challenge farming such a big property under an organic regime?
Yeah, it is. And when we first started, I just really didn't know how we were going to do it with the sheep. And these sheep have made it very possible.
What, because they're so easy care?
Yeah. And they're productive too, yeah. Yes.
Now, another mob of sheep have come into the pen beside us, and these sheep have slightly more wool on their backs than your ones had.
Yeah, these haven't completed shedding yet, and, you know, they're probably at their scruffiest stage, but they're really well-grown sheep underneath.
Strong bodies.
Yeah, no, they're good sheep.
What sort of percentages do you get from your mixed-age ewes?
Yeah, so they don't perform better than any other crossbred breed. The flock sort of this year did 132. That's right across the board, including the two-tooths. And then the average is around that 135. Yeah, so they're not amazing producers, but we intend to improve that.
What sort of feed do they get here?
We try and feed things really well, but North Canterbury's a pretty dry environment, so they do get put under a lot of pressure. But we do a lot of legume mixes, lucerne, chicory, plantain, and grasses and clovers. Mm. That's sort of the real engine room of the station.
And do you have irrigation here?
Yes, 200 hectares of irrigation, and most of that is under organic cash cropping. And we have a cropping manager called David, and he grows fennel as a predominant crop, linseed, wheat, barley, radish, clover. Yeah, all organic, all contracted, yeah. Mm.
So these are four seeds?
All four seed. And the sheep play second fiddle to that on the irrigation. But in saying that, in the autumn and the winter, they get in there afterwards with short rotation ryegrass and undersows.
Farmers arrive early to check out the ewes, lambs and rams on offer. And for some, it's been a mission to get here.
I'm Kate Callaghan, I'm from Maunganui, North Island, up the Mangamahu Valley.
Tell me about your farm.
So we're a steep hill country farm with sheep and beef and Manuka honey as well, and we're farming Wiltshires, and that's why we're down here today.
Mm. How long have you been farming Wiltshires?
About eight to 10 years now.
What was the original attraction?
So my dad actually got into them, just for easy care and low inputs and less work, yeah. And obviously because the wool prices are no good, so it's not much point farming for wool anymore, unfortunately.
And how are they doing up there?
Yeah, good. Yeah, really good. We're really impressed with having less work and less labour inputs, and yeah, it's a good way to farm.
And you were saying that this is the first time you've flown into Christchurch?
Yeah, first time down south, so very interesting, but we were keen to come down and have a look at Mount Cass's sheep and see what they were up to, especially with their organic farming.
Are you organic or conventional?
No, we're conventional, but we're definitely well on our way to doing it already without having actually going down that path yet. So with just being low inputs, like we're not drenching a lot and not doing much to them at all, really.
What are you looking for today?
We're after just some more ewes to top up what we've already got. A couple of hundred, hopefully, because we've actually just recently completely got out of our woolly sheep, and so we need a few more to replace them.
From what you've seen so far, what are your impressions?
Yes, I'm really impressed, actually, and it's really good to see heaps of people here that are getting into it and sort of changing their ways and realising that there's different breeds out there that are easier to farm, and you're not having to worry about the wool and not getting paid for it.
Do you think you might be doing some bidding today?
Yeah, I hope so. We'll see how expensive they are, I think. Seems like a lot of people here, so there might be a bit of competition.
Good luck with the auction today, and hopefully you'll end up with the sheep you want.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you.
Once the sheep are all sorted, farm staff are on hand to chat with potential buyers.
I'm Willie Pears. I'm from down Southland, and I've been working at Mount Cass for a year. I'm a block manager on one of the blocks on Mount Cass. It's running two blocks, and I'm on the front side, and Steph Tweed's on the back part.
So are you responsible for some of these sheep that are being sold today?
Yeah, I sort of look after all the stud sheep, and yeah, but a lot of them are from they're probably about half and half. Half are from this block and half are from Steph's block. Yeah.
Yes. Before you came, had you had experience with the Wiltshires?
No, I had no experience at all. But I'd compare them to a Perrondale, sort of a really tough sheep.
Does the wool literally just fall off, or do you have to comb it off? How does it work?
When the sheep are in really good nutrition or like a single lamb or something, they'll shed a lot earlier. So just basically when the lambs are doing really well, they'll shed a lot more. But and it has a bit to do with genetics, obviously.
Yes.
So the more genetically superior they get, they'll shed more in time, hopefully, yeah.
What were you doing in Southland before you came here? And what was the attraction of this station?
I was just working on a sort of sheep, beef and deer property down south, and then I went overseas and I was just working around this area, and then a job just sort of popped up and just took it, yeah.
Yes.
So it just all worked out quite well, really, yeah.
Had you worked on an organic farm before?
No, never.
Did that pose some challenges?
Yeah, I found it quite interesting. I thought it'd be quite neat to work on an organic farm, yeah. A lot of people ask you what you do differently, but you don't really notice much because you're probably doing less, you're not drenching as much and stuff like that.
Yes.
So it works really well in this place. Like, it's probably good, healthy country for it, but yeah, we get good fat lambs away early and stuff like that. Like, it's not really too challenging, to be honest, yeah, from farming them anyway. Yeah, they seem to still perform organically, I reckon.
And you've got some cattle here as well?
Yeah, we have got we've got a couple of hundred breeding cows and another 300 trading cattle sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah, so do they work in with the whole system?
Yeah, we sort of use them to try and clean up worms and stuff, or like put our younger sheep in areas where cattle have been, because they clean up the worms pretty good.
Graham Taylor, a pathologist from Appleby near Nelson, is a Wiltshire enthusiast. How long have you had an interest in sheep?
All my life, really. My father's still a sheep farmer now, and I have tried to be a bit of a sheep farmer on the side as well as being a pathologist for a number of years, and particularly enjoyed the Wiltshires over the last few years.
What is it about this breed that you like?
I just really like the fact that they're self-shedding and they're very easy care, essentially. I mean, you don't have to tail them if you don't want to, although these ones are tailed. You don't have to dag them, they don't get fly, they're quite resistant to a lot of worms, and obviously that you don't have to shear them, which is a huge bonus for many people.
What do you think about the sheep in front of us?
Oh, I think they look good, yeah. I'm primarily here looking for a ram, and the rams look good, they're nice big rams, and they look like they're pretty clean shedding, so that's good.
You're in the wrong one, I'll give you the tip. 355.
My name's Sarah Hurd, and I'm a partner in Mount Cass Station. So we're outside looking at these sheep, and the auction's underway.
So far, prices seem to be pretty good.
I think way above expectation. However, I haven't been, you know, close to the heart of the conversations around prices, but yeah.
I think the second lot today sold for, $395 a head?
We'd have to be pleased, wouldn't we, Cosmo? Yes.
Gosh, quite exciting for you, and I guess it's been quite a big day.
It has, yes. It's been a conversation we started over a year ago about the time for the Wiltshire and the shedding sheep is about to come, and we felt that we were in a position where we were able to sell some sheep, and Andrew was happy with the stock that he had. He was happy to put them up for sale. So we got to that point. And I thought it's just opportunity and the right timing.
And there are people from all over the country here today.
Yes, I gather. People from Southland, Nelson, south of Auckland, Whanganui, yeah, all over. And I've just been talking to a friend, and he said he was standing beside a pig farmer, a chicken farmer, a dairy farmer. So as well as our traditional sheep farmers, we've got others that have got wanting a smaller number of sheep, and Wiltshires are so easy care.
Now, as well as being a farmer, Sarah, you're also a program director at the Agri-Women's Development Trust. Tell me about your role there.
I'm a program facilitator.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So I got involved in the trust back in 2012 when I did one of their programs myself. It was called First Steps. And I really liked what the trust was offering for farming women, and I got a lot out of the course myself. And I was looking to have something alongside of my farming on-farm role, somewhere where I could get out and about and work with women, because I have a family of men and our business is full of men, so it's nice to get out and work with farming women.
What sort of work does that facilitation involve?
Every so often, I head away for a few days and, yeah, we put on these programs. So leadership and governance programs, understanding your farming business, which is helping equip women with business skills, knowledge, confidence. Confidence is a big thing. So, yeah, it's great.
How rewarding for you doing that.
It is. It's awesome. I love it. And it's also helped me in my role in this farming business.
Mm.
Helped me get my confidence and feel that I can contribute value to our business here.
Now tell me about the Wash Creek organic meat side of the business. How is that going?
That's going well, thank you. We started that, I think, maybe about four or five years ago, and now it is run independently. It's a sort of a separate enterprise to the farming business.
Okay.
And we have two people that run that, and yeah, we're into some supermarkets, and it's been an interesting enterprise to get off the ground and be part of, full of challenges and lots of learnings, and not straightforward, but something that the partners were all keen to have a go at, creating our own brand.
Mm. Is that brand only using meat that comes from this farm?
Yes, it is, yeah, so beef and lamb.
And where are you from, Sarah? What's your background?
I'm from South Otago. I grew up on a farm near the Pomahaka River, a sheep and cropping farm. And my mum and dad are here today. They sold their farm about, 30-odd years ago and moved to North Canterbury. I think they wondered what on earth they'd done, because they farmed in a place where it rained a lot and the grass always grew. And they came to the dry hills of Omahi. But, it was a great place to grow up. And so I think it certainly helps when you are from a farm and you marry a farmer. You sort of understand how things roll.
I'll let them go. 270, anybody else? Thomas, what do you say?
Maybe you going?
270. 275. You come to buy a nice line, that number, sir. 280. 280. I'll give you 270, a great bidder. 280, give you two you like. The bids you soon, I'll let them go for 280. Well done. Well over at 280.
Thank you. Noel Moletta farms at Waitui in the Marlborough Sands.
We've been farming there for about 44 years soon, and running these Shire sheep, which we're here selling today. And yep, we've come down to follow 1,025 lambs to the sale, this inaugural sale at Mount Cass.
And how are things going? These sales are happening right behind us. Have you sold any sheep yet?
Yes, we've sold quite a few pens of the ewe lambs, and they've sold exceptionally well. I think 170 was the top line, which I'm very happy with.
How satisfying seeing your lovely sheep go to other farms.
Absolutely. No, I wish the sheep and the purchaser well.
Yes. Yeah. Do you think that there's a growing interest now in these sheep because of low wool prices?
Yes, it's definitely the cause of the change. People don't like change unless they're forced to, pretty much, especially sheep farmers, I think. We're a conventional bunch, but the wool price is a real tough one. It's been pretty poor for a long time, actually. So, that's what's pushing it along for sure.
Yes. Is this something you'd like to do on an annual basis?
I think we could. You know, we'll have to do the sums afterwards because there's a few costs sending them down here. But just to see the lambs actually go to another farm rather than off to the meat company, I think that's good. And we might be able to provide some more tributes next year if we know there's a demand. So, yeah, we'll have a good yarn with the Mount Cass people and see how it evolves.
Thank you very much, Noel, and I'll let you get back to the auction because there's still a fair amount of sheep to go.
Yeah, there's a few more pens of ours, so hopefully they'll find a home.
Help, they got 270.
Marlborough Sounds farmer Noel Moletta talking to Cosmo Kentish Barnes at the Mount Cass Station Wiltshire Sheep Sale in North Canterbury. Andrew Hurd says 3,444 sheep were sold to keen bidders from Kerikeri to Cromwell. Whanganui farmer Kate Kerrick didn't end up buying. She told Andrew afterwards she was too cautious, but will be back next year. According to bidders Liam Beattie, online buyers bid on half of the pens offered, with 30% of the total sale being purchased online. And if you'd like to see a gallery of photos Cosmo took on the day, go to the Country Life webpage.
And that's it for Country Life's first program for 2021. We'll be back next week with more stories from rural New Zealand. Until then, have a great week.
He Te Rawiki, he kuna rā.